check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to another episode of College Basketball Recruiting Weekly. And this week, we are going to talk about NBA rookies. Joining me is the National Basketball Director for 24/7 Sports, Eric Bossy. I'm Adam Finkelstein. And Ebos, like myself, we like to watch us some NBA. I mean, Ebos, I don't know about you, but like, if I'm not watching a game for work and I've just got to turn something on for entertainment, it kind of varies year to year. Like some years I find myself in like a college phase where I'm watching mostly college. This year I find myself watching a lot of NBA, but I'm curious, like if you have to pick a game for sheer entertainment value, what are you watching?
Well, like you, a lot of it depends on nightly matchups and things like that, but I'm always going to gravitate towards the NBA if I have a chance, especially as it starts to get later in the night and things, just because, you know, basketball is my favorite sport. So why would I not want to watch it at the highest level?
Fair enough. All right. So this week on the site, I'm going to be diving into the NBA rookies, and I'm going to be exploring it from the perspective of who has been the best this year. But obviously, that's a little bit of a different calculus between who is the best prospect. So in this episode of the show, Ebos and I are going to revisit draft night and kind of approach it from the standpoint of, if we had to do it again, who would be the top 10 picks in the draft? Before we do that, though, because I think it's undeniable that Victor Wembanyama would again be the number one pick, but it is not undeniable that he is the runaway candidate for Rookie of the Year. Chet Holmgren, who was selected with the second overall pick in 2022, missed what would have been his rookie season with injury, thus he is eligible for that award this season. So, Ebos, before we get going, who would be your pick for Rookie of the Year at this point?
So I'm still going to go with Victor Wembanyama. He's leading the NBA in block shots as a rookie at just over 3 a game. He's averaging over 10 rebounds a game now. He's shown some offensive potency. You know, the efficiency isn't quite there yet, but I love what he's doing. Now, if you wanted to argue Chet Holmgren, I wouldn't be mad at you. You know, Oklahoma City has been jockeying for the number one slot in the Western Conference with Minnesota. So winning matters a lot, whereas, you know, the Spurs are just now reached double-digit wins here at 10-40 as we're filming this. So it could go both ways, but I'm just going to go. I always feel like Rookie of the Year is kind of a pure talent award, and for that reason, I side with Wemby.
I like that logic, because what I was going to say was I was going to cite the eye test, and admittedly, I've been a card-carrying member of the Chet Holmgren fan club since he was about 15 years old. I mean, I still remember the first time I saw him play in New Jersey I think it was a May session of the Under Armour Association. And man, his chest was almost concave back then, but you could just see that talent and that competitiveness, I think, is really kind of the first thing that I remember about him. But when you watch Wemby play, I mean, he makes 3 to 5 plays per game that just, I don't know that there's any other player in the world who could make. And it's just, he does stuff every night that I've never seen before. And the other thing that I don't think we are talking enough about is the fact that he stayed healthy. You know, that was the big question coming into the draft, is how durable is he? Well, San Antonio has not been good. They're very young. And you know, I think not quite at the level that Wemby himself hoped they would be this year, but he has been durable, and he's getting better with each passing month. And as great as Chet has been, and as great as OKC has been, I've got to agree with you that Wemby is in my opinion the Rookie of the Year at this point. And we're about halfway through the season. All right, so with that in mind, I think it's obvious Wemby would go number one if we were redrafting the 2023 NBA draft today. At number two, the Hornets were perceived as having a choice between Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson. They took Brandon Miller, and 8 months later, I think this really looks like the right choice. What do you think?
Yeah, no doubt. Brandon Miller has been outstanding. You know, I think if in a Wemby-less and Chet Holmgren-less world, we're talking about him as probably the prohibitive favorite as the rookie of the year right now. You know, he's shooting high 30 percentages from three-point range. He just recently had a career high of 35 points. He scored 20 or more 14 times. I don't think any other rookie has come close to that. And he just looks like a guy who's going to be burning jump shots for the next 15 years.
Yeah, and I think totally agree with everything you just said. I think at the beginning, like kind of first 20 games of the season, we were trying to see is he a good shooter or is he a great shooter? The thing that everybody was pretty universally concerned about was how much pressure could he put on the rim? How well was he going to finish? You heard a lot of talk about is he a two-level scorer or a three-level scorer? Because we knew from high school that he could really score in the mid-range area, but there were questions about how he could finish. I still think there are questions about how he finishes. I know the metrics are maybe a little bit better than people think, but when you watch the game tape, if he gets bumped before he has a chance to elevate, it's usually not a good finish for him. But midair, when he has a little room to operate, he's got enough craft, he's got enough skill, he's got enough length and athleticism where, as I said, the metrics I think are a little bit better, but I agree. I think, you know, for all the criticism that the Charlotte front office has gotten over the years, I think they got this one right. And remember, it was hard to evaluate Miller in the pre-draft process because he had mono and he really wasn't working out very much. And when he was reportedly just a shell of himself. So the third pick now was Portland, and Portland was perceived to have the easiest pick of the night. They were going to take whoever Charlotte didn't take, but Scoot Henderson has not been as good as many people, myself included, expected. So I'll pose this question to you. Should Portland, in retrospect, have considered other players more so than they did? Or if they had to do it all over again today, is there anyone else you would consider, or do you still think Scoot is the third best long-term prospect? Not saying he's been the third best rookie, third best long-term prospect in this class.
As of today, no, I don't think they should have done anything different. I think it's way too early to write off Scoot. I know he's still shooting a little bit under 40%, but you know he's shown that physically, athletically, he's an NBA player. He can create separation. He can get to the rim. You know, he's one of only two rookies to score 30 or more multiple times this season. So when he's been good, he's been really, really good. He's been 22 or above six times. So the highs are up there. Now it's just a matter of getting a little bit of stability. And, you know, it's not exactly the most stable situation his rookie year. You know, I think learning to play with another guy who's pretty similar, I think, in how he operates at Anfernee Simons when he's healthy is another thing to take into consideration. But to me, Scoot has shown more than enough of what he's capable of doing. It's too early to question things. And again, you know, the guy's only 20 years old. Let's give him at least a year or two before we, you know, start writing him off.
So I wrestled with this one. I was like, if I'm Portland here, is there anybody else? You know, the Thompson brothers went 4 and 5. Anthony Black went 6. Bilal Coulibaly went 7. I think I'd rather have Scoot over any of those guys. Obviously, Jaime Jaquez, Derek Lively, they've been among the best rookies. I still think, although Scoot has not been as good as I thought he would, I still think that's probably the guy you're gonna roll the dice on and you're going to invest in trying to develop. I mean, I will say in addition to the shooting numbers, which you know you can see on paper, there's been a level of feel about it that I think is a little concerning too. And I'm not sure if it's a chemistry issue with you know, who they have in the backcourt. And I think Shaedon Sharpe is obviously another long-term guy there that they're investing in. But I think you want to see the feel and the shooting both come on. All right. So we're going to take those three picks and call them that they would stay flush, if you will, and they would continue to be the first three picks in the draft. We're going to go through and ultimately try and get 10. We can just alternate back and forth now that we've gotten those first three guys off the board. The Rockets on draft night were perceived as the big turning point of the draft. I think it was wide open. There were three, four, potentially even five players that they were reportedly considering going into the week of the draft. But now, 8 months later, who would you say you would take with the fourth pick in the draft?
I've got a feeling, Adam, that you're probably going to agree with me on this one. This is probably the guy that you're going to pick. So I'm almost wanting you to make this one because I've got a little bit of a wild hair at number five. But Derek Lively, I think, goes number four in a redraft. The guy's been too good. You know, he's shooting almost 74% from the field. He's started all but one game so far on a team that's contending. He's got 9 double-doubles, which I believe leads all rookies. And, you know, he's on a playoff contending team. You know, obviously, Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, when they're playing together, is the focus. But I would have a hard time not taking Lively at this point based on what he's done in the NBA so far.
Now, the critique is going to be all centers. They're not as valued as much. You can get a center later in the draft. You know, I think that but the numbers that you've mentioned are undeniable. Now, it's obviously a great fit. Get a lob partner for Kyrie and Luka and someone who can protect the rim. But the metrics, I think, are really impressive as well. I mean, you talked about the difference when he's on the floor versus when he's not. Their defense per 100% possessions, their defensive rating is 5 points better when he's on the floor. So just in terms of what he brings to them on that end of the floor. And offensively, I think, you know, we do agree. I am a Lively fan. I think where we may disagree is I still believe that this guy is going to be able to stretch the floor long term. I know you like the fact that he's playing inside out, and I don't disagree with you. I just think, like, fast forward 3 years, if he's making spot up threes from the top of the key, I will be doing my victory lap on Twitter, if Twitter still exists. Just note it now. I think he's going to be able to shoot, but we'll see. Go
he's
ahead. Push back.
0 for his career so far, so he can only go up from here.
Well played. Well played. All right. With the fifth pick in the redraft, I'm admittedly torn here. But I think what I'm going to do is go Jaime Jaquez. I'm curious now if you would have done this as well. Now, I understand he turns 23 years old on February 18th. So there is concerns about the upside. But he has been far better than expected. I think some of the shooting has leveled off to where we now expected it to be. Early on, he was shooting at a much higher clip. But he's been able to impact winning. He's been a terrific fit for that Heat culture. He defends, he competes, and he's got this knack for creating his own shot that I think sometimes when you describe his game, you know, you say, oh, great footwork. He scores over the top of people. He's crafty. Like some of those buzzwords that we say about a lot of different people, but he's just got a knack for getting his own shot off. And so while, you know, there were questions about how his offensive game was going to translate, because lots of times he was playing as like a small ball four at UCLA, and obviously that's not necessarily a role that he's going to see the most volume with in the NBA. I think some of those same skill sets have translated. It's just going to be interesting now that they have Terry Rozier, you know, how that impacts the amount of volume he has. But he's been great. He's been great. So I understand that, you know, there may be guys with higher physical upside potentially, although I think Jaime is a better athlete than people give him credit for. But I just think he's a winner, and I'm surprising myself that I'm going to say, you know, top five pick if we were doing this again. But if you told me that guy was an all-star, you know, 4 years down the road, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. And on draft night, I did not think that was in the range of potential outcomes.
Yeah, I like Jaime a lot, too. I would have had him at number 10 on my redraft. Okay. So I don't think five is out of that range. You know, I'm more of a – I still think when you're talking top five, top six, I'm trying to take a home run swing. So I would have waited maybe a little bit longer on Jaime, but he's good. You know, I think all the things you say, I watched that guy, and I don't know if this is a perfect comparison, but I kind of feel like he's got a little bit of a new age Matt Harpering to him. Just a hard-nosed guy with a high skill level who can play inside and out. You know, he's not shooting a particularly high rate from three right now. I think he's around 34%. But I think he can get up in that upper 30 range when it's all said and done. And he just does a lot of good. And I still think in today's NBA, he can play a little bit inside out as a 3-4 combo. So I love it. But like I said, I might have swung for the fences a little bit more, so I can use who I would have taken at 5 when we get to number 6 here. Yeah, you got the next pick.
Who's your? I'm curious. You going Whitmore or Thompson's? Who are you going?
I'm going Cam Whitmore. Yep. We're going with the Rocket. He originally went number 20 to Houston on draft night. I think, you know, there were some concerns about his maturity level and things like that, which I get. But again, you know, we're talking about a dude that is still only 19 years old and won't turn 20 until July. So he's going to be a teenager his entire rookie year, which not a lot of guys get to do that, especially American-born players. You know, there were some real struggles with him early, but anyone who sees what he's doing over this last month or so is pretty crazy. You know, he's been in double figures 14 times so far. All of those have happened since January 10th. So within the last month, you know, and during January, he was 40.7% from three. So he's showing a lot of potential as a shooter. Obviously, we know about him
more than Jaime Jaquez already. Yeah.
Obviously, we know him as about an open floor athlete. But here's what really stands out to me. I think a lot of the stat guys like the per 40 stats.
Yeah.
Per 40 minutes a night, he's at 28 points and 8.9 rebounds per game. That's some serious production for a 19-year-old. And you know, he's got some feel questions. He's definitely a feels like leather all star. He's not much of a passer right now. You know, that thing, he's got something feels like leather in his hands. He's going to shoot. But, man, in the high-scoring NBA right now, he seems like a good fit, and he's rolling and looks like a guy who eventually could be a guy we look back on a few years from now and say, hey, that guy could have been a top-5 pick.
Well, to put it in perspective, and a lot of people were projecting him as a top-5 pick going into draft night. To the point where Houston, who got him at 20, I believe, was believed to be considering him at 4. And then this slide begins that was apparently rooted in a couple of different things, but reportedly had a bad workout in Detroit, where Troy Weaver has connections to the DMV area where Whitmore is from. And then it just becomes this copycat thing. And I remember on draft night, you know, you don't want to take him at 4 or 5 because he had a bad workout. There's some, you know, maturity concerns, whatever. I get it. But when you start getting like down to 10, 11, 12, 13, I remember I said it on draft night, like we were well beyond the point where it was worth the risk. And so for him to land all the way at back with Houston, I think this is really interesting, because whether or not him and Amen Thompson and Jalen Green and all those guys fit together around a team where suddenly Sengun looks like the best young prospect on the team, that's going to be really interesting to me. But I love the fit with Udoka as the head coach, because Udoka is a guy who says, if you don't defend, you don't play. And is more than from everything that I've read and seen, is more than happy to, you know, is going to rise to any confrontation. So if Cam Whitmore wants to complain about it, he's going to be met with a head coach who doesn't back down a little at all. And I think that is the perfect scenario for Cam Whitmore to potentially maximize what he's got. And to your point, I think as long as he gives effort and attention to detail on the defensive end of the floor, he'll probably be allowed to play with some offensive freedom. So I like it. I like it. All right, that was 6, right?
Yep, so you're up at 7 here.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, 7, I'm going to go. All right, I know we're going to disagree again, because I'm struggling. The Thompsons are just such non-shooters. I'm really struggling. I'm debating between 2 guards, admittedly. And one of the guys that I'm going to end up going with is Cason Wallace.
I thought you were going to go Jordan Hawkins here.
Yeah, no, that was the other guard I was debating between. Yep, it was either Cason Wallace or Jordan Hawkins, but I'm trying to avoid the UConn homer, the narrative. So the thing about Cason Wallace is I think, you know, people said he wasn't a point guard. People said he couldn't shoot. He's got nearly a 3-to-1 assist to turnover ratio, and he's shooting 42% from the 3-point line through 49 games.
46% in limited starts.
What's that?
46% plus in limited starts.
Yeah. So like he's doing it with a small sample size. So he doesn't have the benefit of volume and he's able to impact winning. He can play on or off the ball. Obviously Shea's got the ball in his hands a lot. Williams has the ball in his hands a lot. Giddy has the ball in his hands a lot. But if you really watch him play, he's got more creativity and playmaking ability than I think, let me say this, than I realized when he was in high school. I think that's an area of his game that's really evolved. He plays both ends of the floor. We've always known he was tough. We've always known he defended and that he was long. So I just think now that we're getting in this redraft where I'm just not sure that any of the guys still left on the board, how much star potential they really have, I'm going with the guy that I think could legitimately be like a 10-year NBA starter if things go the right way. So that's my case for Cason. Didn't mean to rhyme there. You can rebuttal or you can go directly to your next pick. It's your call.
Yeah, no, I'm not mad at Cason there. There's a couple guys that I might have taken ahead of him, but he's good. Again, I've got a little bit more of a this high in the draft, shoot for the stars type thing, but Cason's pretty dang good and is going to be really good for a long time. So we'll go ahead on number eight, where I would have taken him a little bit earlier, but I will take Amen Thompson. Originally went in number four on draft night in Houston. Now, obviously, he's kind of a tough one to figure because he had the injury issues for so long, and he's really now just kind of getting his feet wet. Obviously, the shooting percentages are a concern. He's slightly better than his brother at around 17% from three, whereas his brother's below 15%. So I'm not sure that's when you're going to be beating your chest about if you're Amen Thompson. But I think we're starting to see some signs of what he can do as an all-around player. Against Toronto a few games ago, I think he had 19 points, 7 rebounds, 4 assists. I think that's a good indicator of the type of all-around player he can be. And still, the thing about the Thompsons without the shooting, and I know some people are going to laugh about this when I talk about defense, is that we're still talking about a guy that does look like he's a potential all-NBA level defender out on the wing, as does his brother. And while there's still the offensive questions, I think it's hard to dismiss that. I know the NBA is really high scoring right now. The league is not set up for defense. It's set up for offense. But, you know, theoretically, Houston's fighting for playoff spots right now. Defense is going to play in at some point down the road, and that's where I think you can really help them out. And there's just too much athletic upside to write him or his brother off just yet.
So you make a really interesting point, and this is something that I've thought about over the years, but I don't think I've ever written about it or talked about it. It seems that sometimes the draft picks that end up being the biggest sleepers end up because they recognize a trend in the game that's going to develop. And if you, not specifically you, but if anybody is of the belief that the NBA, the pendulum, if you will, between offense and defense is swinging, and right now it is at its max towards offense, and it's gradually going to shift back towards at least kind of regress to the mean maybe and become more defensive oriented, then I think someone like Amen Thompson has a lot more value than I would personally say, given the way the game is played right now. I just have, unless you're a primary creator, I just have a really hard time putting non-shooters on the floor. And that's my concern with him and his brother. But it's interesting nonetheless. You know who I'm taking? I'm taking Jordan Hawkins. I tried to avoid the UConn homer thing, but I just...
That's not being a homer. That's picking a guy who can get buckets, buddy. So don't be mad at that.
Listen, I probably shouldn't phrase it like this, but what the heck? It's a friendly podcast. Toronto Raptors, 13th pick in the draft last year. Everybody knew they were going for a shooter. And listen, you're close to Kansas. I'm close to UConn. I just geographically, so we tend to see them more. They picked Grady Dick over Jordan Hawkins, and that, my friends, was a bogey. I'm a big fan of Grady. You know, watched him since high school. Winning player. I think he's ultimately going to make it in the NBA. But I don't know how you could watch. I just didn't understand that. I didn't understand that. And I don't want to act like I'm that much, you know, like I know all that much or anything like that. But I just did not understand saying Grady Dick was a better movement shooter than Jordan Hawkins, given the progression that Jordan showed from his freshman to sophomore year at UConn, given the way in which he was utilized last year and the types of shots he was making. I mean, this guy was flying around the court, getting his feet set and then elevating, like, and then shooting like a softball with good touch. And he did the same thing to start the year. Now, his numbers, I think the last time we talked about this, we said as soon as CJ McCollum gets back in the lineup, his numbers are going to go down. And that happened. But he showed you what he's capable of. And this is a guy whose body is still not NBA ready, but he's got a pull-up game that's legit. He's got lift at the rim. He doesn't put a ton of pressure on the rim as a creator, but he can get to his pull-up and he can knock that down. I just think movement shooter like this, you know, a couple of years from now, he's legitimately probably going to have 30 pounds of muscle on his frame. And yeah, that's why I'm going Jordan Hawkins.
No, I love it. He's the only other rookie with multiple 30-point games. He's got the second highest scoring game for a rookie with 34, just behind Brandon Miller at 35. And it's funny, I think you took him in this redraft. You got him at number 9, right? Actually, on my board, when I wrote out my new top 10, 12 picks, I actually had him at number 8, but I couldn't take him at number 8 because Amen Thompson, who I had two spots higher on the board than him at number 6, was still available. So, you know, I had to stay true to my board, but, you know, I'm not mad. I would, if it was just me drafting, I would have taken him a pick earlier. So I think he's awesome. I wouldn't be surprised to see him be, if not an all-star, at least a borderline all-star player for years to come. He certainly fits the way the league's going. I think he's got some playmaking and stuff to his game that we're going to see him add as things go. But at the end of the day, the guy can put the ball in the hole at a high level. And it's, you know, if he's not playing behind a CJ McCollum right now, I think we're seeing that guy do a lot more. You know, he has started 10 games, and in those games, he's averaged 17 points and 4 assists per game. So I think that's a pretty good indicator of what he could be doing with regular heavy minutes. And that's, you know, at 35 minutes a game in those 10 starts.
And New Orleans is so deep. Like, they've got so many guards over there and so many people on the wing, from Dyson Daniels to Troy Murphy, CJ McCollum, you know, Brandon Ingram, I guess, is a 3 over there. So it's like there's just so many guards that need minutes. You put Jordan Hawkins on a different team, I don't know, say Toronto, and I think you would really see, you'd really be seeing something. All right, I'm curious. Are you pairing the Thompson twins? Not that this is a construct a roster exercise, but is Asar the next player on your board?
Yeah. If I'm going by who's left over on my board that hasn't been taken yet, I would go with Asar, who I had number 7 in a redraft. He originally went number 5. On draft night to Detroit. So if we're looking at those things and that thing, I think number 10, he provides a lot of value. You know, I think the first month he had during November was incredible, right? Now, granted, Detroit was bad, real bad, but he was averaging almost 12 points and 9 rebounds per game. So nearly a double-double during the first month of his rookie season. Now, he's regressed pretty badly during December and January. In December, he was 6.6 and 4.4. In December, he was 6.1 and 5.1. So those are kind of scary numbers. But, you know, rookies are going to have some ups and downs. And I just don't know how a rookie can succeed in what's currently going on in Detroit. You know, just the roster construction doesn't make much sense. You know, who does he turn to in the locker room as a veteran leader? You know, where, if you're a young rookie struggling, you turn right now in that setup and get the help you need to get out of a funk, you know? And that's not to attack Detroit. It just is what it is. You know, I'm sure they're hoping it's going to be much different next year. I would imagine there's going to be a little bit of a house cleaning from a roster construction standpoint, as much as they can do within, you know, salary cap and NBA rules and all that stuff. But again, like his brother, there's just too much potential and upside there to fully write them off. Again, I think we both agreed that their shooting problems were being way too downplayed during the draft process. And they've
I will concede. I thought Assar, because Assar made shots late in the OTE season last year, and I thought his shooting was a little bit better than Amend's based on that last month of the OTE season. But that is not come to pass.
As we're filming, he's checking in at 14.3% from three, which, you know, at any position in the NBA is really, really scary, especially for a perimeter player, because you don't want to end up turning into, you know, a four at 6 foot six. You know, who knows? Maybe this guy's path is ending up as a supercharged athletic Chuck Hayes at some point. I don't know. But it's too early to write him off. You know, again, there's only upwards to go with the shooting. You know, just think about it. If he can even get this guy into the upper 20s and during his sophomore campaign, we're talking about something. But again, too much upside. And also, I think with him and his brother, we're talking about two really high character guys, talking about two guys who are known hard workers. I know they're not satisfied with this. And I know that some pride is going to kick in and they're going to get in and do some work for the summer. So we'll see what happens. But still too early for me to write him off. And if I can get Assar Thompson at number 10, I'm going to go ahead and take him there in the redraft.
That's almost part of what scares me more, is like, I know they've been working on their shot for years.
That too.
but no, I get it. All right. I think that takes us through the top 10, but before we wrap this one up, I want to see there's other guys worth mentioning. And so is there anybody else you wanted to highlight before we call this one?
Yeah. I think the two that we would probably both agree on, or maybe not, would be Keyonte George. I would have had at number nine in a redraft. You know, I think the shooting, the sub 40% shooting overall was a little bit worrisome, but I think we know he's kind of a high volume guy. He's going to get it. He's going to get it up there. But I think what is intriguing about him is that in the 16 starts he's had, he's averaging 5.9 assists per game. So I think he's proving that he's a legitimate playmaker for others. So he's got that ability to be that kind of high scoring guy who maybe not quite as efficient as you would like, offsets that inefficiency with his shooting by being able to create for others in the span of that. And then the other guy would be Brandon Podziemski, who I think has been awesome.
That's your guy.
Golden State. You know, I mean, man, 9.5 points, 5.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists per game, 37%-ish from the 3-point line, 47% range from overall. Like, I don't know how high there is for him to go from here, but for a guy who got taken number 19, so, and, you know, getting into the latter part of the mid to latter part of the first round, that's a really good value, I think. And I think he's a guy that's is proving he's going to be a really solid role player to starter type in the NBA for at least 10 to 12 years.
A couple of things on Pods. He's still just 20 years old as we record this. He turns 21 on February 25th. He is an insane perimeter rebounder. I mean, 5.6 per game as we record. Just a really smart player. He's a good passer. I don't know how many people in this draft would have been capable, and we've seen this over the years, of stepping right into Golden State's intricate offensive system and having the feel and basketball IQ to be able to operate in that right away. I mean, as good as Jonathan Kuminga has been recently, it was a process for him to figure out how to find his role in that system. So Pods, in addition to being highly skilled and really tough to have those kinds of rebounding numbers, is also like super, super smart. And I think that's the part of him that we need to recognize. And also, you know, when Golden State took him at 19, that was much higher than people expected on draft night. And now it's looking like maybe he should have been in the mix at the tail end of the lottery. You mentioned Keyonte George and his passing. I want to ask you about this. When he was at IMG, his senior year in high school, I remember thinking, like, from a personality standpoint, and remember, the Thompsons and Scoop did not play, you know, high school basketball their senior year. So, like, they weren't in this conversation. But I remember thinking Keyonte was like the alpha of that group. Like, he was the guy. This was just my personal opinion. he was the, but he was noticeably out of shape at the time. He's made such a commitment to his body that has continued over the course of the last 2 years, made great gains at Baylor, and he's continued to go to new levels this year. But and everybody talks about that, rightfully so. I think the thing that maybe people don't talk about enough has been the progression of his passing, because I'm curious if you feel the same way I do, that that part of his game is underrated. You mentioned his metrics, but also much better than it was a couple of years ago. I remember watching his film last year at Baylor, thinking that there was a vast difference between his vision when he was stationary and when he was on the move. And he's making passes this year that I don't think he had in his bag a year ago, certainly 2 years ago, but I'm curious if you feel the same way.
I can see that a little bit. Personally, I've always felt he's had pretty good instincts as a passer. He just hasn't had the instinct to pass the ball, if that makes sense. Yeah. His instinct has been to shoot. Like you mentioned, you know, late game situations, that guy always wanted to take the last shot. You know, he won the ball in his hands. He's unafraid of that moment. And I think at Baylor, it wasn't his job to pass. You know, it was his job to catch, go get buckets. So now, so now he's not, pardon me, you know, you want a little bit more of a balance from him. And I think he's starting to show that. And, you know, he's playing more minutes. The floor is more spread. I just think he's a pretty all around dynamic guard who's got a lot going for him that really is settling in as a nice pro. And I think, you know, what he go? He went, I think, 13 or 16 to the Jazz. I think that's, they're getting pretty good value out of that guy. And I think he's a guy that, you know, you could argue maybe should have gone in the top 10 or certainly should have gone in the lottery.
They took Taylor Hendricks at 9, so it all works out. Two other guys to shout out real quick before it's over. Anthony Black, who went 6. He was someone that I was really high on draft night. I think his basketball IQ and his positional versatility and his defensive upside is really high. There's been nothing that's happened in the first half of the season that has moved me off from that. I just think it's pretty crowded in that Orlando backcourt as they figure out, you know, they've got their top two there, right? And I think they're just trying to figure out which guards they want to build around those guys. Obviously, you know, the three-point shooting is the key variable there, but he's at 36% so far. So if he can ever become like a guy who can make spot-up threes somewhere around 40%, he's never going to be a movement shooter. But being able to be on-off ball versatility at 6'7", being able to be a defensive alpha at 6'7", the way he stuffs all columns and stat sheet, I like him. And then we mentioned him before, but Bilal Coulibaly, the Wizards are bad, but one of the things that's fun when you watch them is they're letting this guy learn on the fly. And he has extreme defensive potential, not unlike the Thompsons. And the shooting, you know, it was a similar scouting report, like long, super long athlete, defensive potential, worried about the skill level. He's shooting 38% from the three-point line. So I think it's like, you know, it's a conversation to say, how does he compare to the Thompsons? But I did want to mention him as well. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole, although I certainly let you share your thoughts on that. But he's been good too. But a lot of it is like you put him in a different situation, I'm not sure he gets on the floor, because as I said, the Wizards are letting him rock out.
Yeah, no doubt. Those are good mentions. I'm really glad you brought up AB. If anything, just to reinforce how good of a class that was in the DFW area, that you had him, Keontae George, and Cason Wallace all within 30 miles of each other in the same class. And I think that's one that for the next 8 to 10 years, we could really end up debating which order are those guys in terms of the best. You know, it could be Wallace, George, Black today. It could be Black, George, Wallace down the road. Like, it could be any combination of those three. I mean, the margin of separation between them and some of the other guards in this class is very, very thin. And I think with AB, you're talking about a guy, another one where he's got maturity. He handles himself. He carries himself like a pro. And I think that Orlando's never going to be upset about that pick with the way things have gone so far.
I agree. All right, last shout out. The Portland Trailblazers front office, they took Tamani Kamara with the 52nd pick. He looks like an NBA rotation player. And then they got Dwop Reith unsigned, who was draft eligible in 2018, who looks like pretty darn good rookie, averaging about 9 points in 17 plus minutes per game, 9 points, four boards. He looks like a legit NBA player. So, you know, you and I both have professional friends in that front office, and to their credit, they are finding some guys under the radar. So did want to shout that out as well. Ebas, this was fun, man. I enjoyed this. I know you and I both like talking about this stuff. This was a lot of fun. Everybody, make sure you visit 247sports.com this week leading up to the Rising Stars Challenge. A lot of my written content is going to focus on the rookies, and next week's show will transition to the sophomores. So we're going to do another episode of the show on the sophomores. You can find that on the 247 Sports channel, and there will be written content as well. In the meantime, there's a ton of content on recruiting. Travis Branham's got a great piece about the best availables. Ebas has done recruiting updates. What else do you have coming out in the next couple of days here, Ebas?
I think we're going to start looking at some freshmen again, maybe going conference by conference to project freshman of the year players. Sounds like some fun to me. And I think there's some good debate because we've got some guys that have come on late compared to some slow starters. So it could be some surprises in there.
And ultimately, I think that's what makes 247 Sports unique, is whether you're looking for high school recruiting, college basketball, NBA draft, it is one-stop shopping. And it's been a lot of fun to keep that momentum going. So thank you for joining us here today. 247sports.com, the 247 Sports channel. We'll see you again real soon.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.